So Harvey asked me to talk about inspiration this morning. And when he first mentioned that topic, I was like, huh, I don't think I've ever really thought about that in a Buddhist context before. So I kind of thought about it for a while, like a couple of weeks, and then I was like, well, the obvious answer is to Google this. So I Googled inspiration. It's not like I have a PhD in the humanities or anything. What does Google say? So I Googled it, and I was reminded of all the different meanings that the word inspiration has. So obviously, there's the one I usually think of like, oh, wow, this person is an inspiration for my practice. You know, like maybe the Dalai Lama, or like thinking about Gandhi or somebody like that. Obviously, they're an inspiration. But then the other meaning of inspiration that really struck me when I was, you know, Googling it is a kind of divine inspiration, a kind of inspiration that somebody gets from a higher power. And I was like, ooh, I want to think about that. So most of what I'm going to say today, if you were to read the Uttara Tantra, I think is translated as the sublime continuum. A lot of what I'm going to say today really can be found there. But I want to address this in a different sort of angle in. Because as I was thinking about it, it seems to me that there's kind of these two directions for inspiration that I've experienced in my practice. There's an outward in type of inspiration, and then there's an inward out type of inspiration. So I want to talk about those, and I especially want to talk about the second type because it's the type that I had heard less about and have thought less about. But before I even talk about that, I wanted to just start by addressing why we even need to talk about inspiration in the first place. I mean, why have I heard so little about it if it's such an important topic? And it seems to me that inspiration is really important on the spiritual path because the path is hard. And I think this is something that we don't necessarily say in Sunday mornings a lot. You know, we want to be like, hey, come meditate. We're going to make it easy for you. It'll be great. You'll reduce your anxiety. You can do it at work. But the thing is, yeah, you've heard that spiel before, right? The thing is, though, if you're actually doing a spiritual practice and you're open to being transformed by that practice, it is not easy. And it's not a hobby. And this is something I really realized after my mom passed away. Like, I think I had been doing Dharma as like, oh, I meditate in the morning. That's my hobby. You know, it was like this thing I did. But there's a real difference, I think, between doing Dharma or doing meditation as a hobby, something that kind of just adds to your life and, you know, makes you a little bit different, maybe like, oh, yes, I meditate. Obviously, I must be spiritual. When I shout at people in traffic, that's just me assuming a wrathful form. So y'all have heard that, right? I mean, if you've hung around with some spiritual folks, I think we all have that thought sometimes. But the thing is, Dharma isn't a hobby. If you really do Dharma, it will change you. And it will change you in ways that you can't control. And to me, that's what makes Dharma practice hard. Because you keep going, and it's sort of like these cherished ideas of who you are and what's important and meaningful in your life. Sometimes it's like taking a piece of dead wood and putting it in a chipper, and it just gets completely like chopped up and destroyed. And if you're going to do that on a somewhat regular basis with what you think is your identity, you need some inspiration. And you need a community, and there's a lot of other things that you need too, but today I just want to focus on that inspiration piece of it. And I just want to acknowledge that it is hard. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to take Dharma as a thing that will transform them. I mean, if you want to do meditation as a hobby, that's totally fine. I'm not going to like harsh on that. I mean, I was doing that for years, even when I thought I wasn't doing that. But I just want to say there's a much deeper level, and that much deeper level is much harder to sustain. So that brings me to what I actually wanted to talk about today, which is inspiration. Probably a lot of us are familiar with this first type of inspiration that I want to talk about, which I'm thinking of as kind of like outside in. And as a footnote, if you're familiar with traditional Tibetan discussions of the four types of faith, or Ann and Harvey like to translate the Tibetan word deba as open-hearted devotion or open-hearted confidence. So if you're familiar with those four types of faith, they kind of start with this, what's called bright faith, where you see somebody or you go to a teaching or, you know, you watch a video of the Dalai Lama and you're like, whoa, this person is amazing. What are they doing? I want to be like them. So that's that sense of like, wow, that kind of inspiration from the outside. And so that can be a really valuable motivator to get you into the path in the first place. Or for me, looking at people like Ann and Harvey and or like, for instance, calling Harvey and being like, oh, this thing just happened. And like, he's so kind and he gives me his time. Like, to me, that's just as inspiring as these great beings who, like, you know, just make it so obvious that there's more to us as humans than being able to punch a clock and, you know, earn an income and pay our bills. So there's that kind of inspiration that makes you think like, wow, maybe there's really something to this. These people I admire, they appear to have developed these capabilities through doing this thing that they're also telling me I can do. Maybe it would be a good idea to really put some effort in and see what happens. So there's that kind of inspiration. And I think we can offer that kind of inspiration to each other too. I know sometimes when people ask questions during Tuesday night teachings, I just think like, wow, they're really doing this. I would like to really do this too. So there's that. But then the other type of inspiration that I kind of want to spend more time on is what I'm thinking of as like more of an inside out type of inspiration, more connected to the second meaning of inspiration as shared by Google. So that type of inspiration, I think it's more connected to the fourth type of open-hearted devotion, where you really have arrived at a confident, stable confidence in your own ability to really walk this path and to really change. But I want to talk about it in terms of inspiration instead. You know, the word divine, so I think I found this on the Merriam-Webster online dictionary. Thank you, Google. So that dictionary defined inspiration as sort of a contact with the divine, somebody being inspired. And I thought, wait a minute, we have that in Buddhism too. So traditional Buddhism doesn't talk about a deity, it doesn't talk about a god, you know, etc., but it talks about Buddha nature. So this is where the Uttara Tantra, the sublime continuum tantra, comes in. So like according to Buddhist thought, you know, in the Mahayana school, and this is really important also for our lineage of Tibetan Buddhism that we practice, the Nyingma lineage, there's a real emphasis that we are all already Buddhas. Like we have at some level of our mind this incredible Buddha nature. And I realize that sounds very Buddhist. I mean, Buddha nature. But I think that's a Buddhist take on it. I mean, I think you can translate that into a lot of different thought worlds. You know, you can say, like, just taking science as your opening into wonder, into awe. I mean, if you think about the composition of our physical bodies, like, first of all, everything we are right now came from the Big Bang. So, like, we have our roots in something that has basically no... I mean, there, if you can wrap your mind around the Big Bang, you probably don't understand what it is. So we have our, like, origins, even physically speaking, in something completely beyond ordinary mind. And then if you think, you know, down into the microscopic level and then down to the atomic level and then down to the subatomic particle level, we're basically all like a bunch of little flashes of light going around masquerading as physical beings. So that's pretty amazing. And then if you like look out into the night sky and you see this vastness and we're part of that vastness, but we're a tiny part, but we're a part, there's this sort of awe and this just sense of there's something more than getting up in the morning when my alarm clock goes off, putting on some clothes, driving through Houston traffic, getting to work. Like all of that is important, but there's this layer of us that's so much more than that. And so that's what Buddhists are talking about when we talk about Buddha nature. And that's what I want to talk about in terms of the second type of inspiration. So traditionally speaking, inspiration, you know, in a Western context, it comes from God. But I think in the context of a meditative life, so not just one meditative session, but if you keep doing this for months and years and decades, you have moments of this kind of inner inspiration where something of your own deepest level, or maybe just deeper level. You know, here's like the bandwidth that we devote to, you know, work and family and school and all that sort of stuff. And a few layers deeper down, there's something joyful. There's something open and alive. And every now and then that comes through in meditation. And then if you keep going, sometimes you just have these openings into just maybe even a glimpse of a state of mind that makes you think, oh, maybe all this talk about Buddha nature, maybe it's not so crazy. Maybe there really is something within each of us that is profound and that's already open and spacious, and we've covered it over with all this other stuff. So that's the sense in which I think that second type of inspiration can really help to give you the forward impetus to keep going when practice is hard, to give you the impetus to stay curious, gives you the impetus to stay compassionate, because if I have this within myself, whoever is driving me crazy in my life at the moment, they probably also have that. Maybe not, but it seems likely. So I think that type of inspiration is actually really important. And that leads me to the last thing I wanted to say. The last thing is, I feel like there are a lot of obstacles to our being able to take in that second type of inspiration. I think often if you have one of those moments when you realize, oh, there's something in this whole, this being that I am, there's something vast, there's something mysterious and profound. I think it's easy, at least for me, maybe this is not the case for y'all, but I'll share it in case it is. It's easy for me to think, well, that's my imagination. I couldn't actually be like that. That's just, I've been brainwashed by these Buddhists into thinking that there's something so amazing inside me, when we all know whatever it is in our own personal history that makes us feel small. So I think that's a really, for me, a really significant type of obstacle to feeling that kind of inspiration, not just for a moment, but for being able to settle into it, you know, to really think like, wow, what is this? Could life really be like that? So there's that type of obstacle, that kind of shutting down or being afraid to kind of spread your Dharma wings. Not even Dharma, I mean, just your wings as a full being, that there's so much more to you. So it can be, it can feel pretentious, or it can feel like you're making something up. But according to Buddhist doctrine, you're not. You're actually kind of settling on something that was already always there. And the other type of obstacle, I think, to being able to settle into this kind of expansive inner inspiration moment is kind of the opposite of the first, where you take it as like self-aggrandizement, like, wow, I must be amazing. I had this moment. I have kind of an embarrassing story to share with y'all about myself as a much younger person. Most of y'all probably know I got like really into Buddhism when I took a class with Anne at Rice. So I was like 20. I was like, oh my God, meditation is the best thing ever. And then after I graduated from college, I went to Thailand, and I had been, you know, meditating for a couple of years at that point. This was my job plan. I was a religious studies and English double major. I'd like to think that has nothing to do with it, but my career path, I figured I would go to Thailand, do some 10-day Vipassana retreats, become enlightened. And then I would come back and I'd be like, hey, you guys, enlightenment. This was my plan. It turns out that didn't happen. It turns out that in doing serious practice and in doing retreats, you just discover how much further down all the crap goes. But you also discover how much further down all the awesomeness goes. So I highly recommend retreat for people. I highly don't recommend enlightenment as a career path. It just doesn't seem to want to play with, you know, time frames. Yeah, like it'll take a year. It'll be awesome. It was awesome, but not in the way I thought. So anyway, I think it's easy to have these kind of meditative experiences and to think like, oh, wow, something is really going on here, and to kind of take it personally. I think it's really with both of these two obstacles that I'm talking about, it's taking it personally that throws me off. Like either, oh no, I couldn't be like that, or like, wow, I'm amazing. Because it's actually not about us at all. This is just the structure of the mind. Like according to Buddhism, and increasingly, like that's just my own sense of it, it's sort of like, I don't know, if you went out in the morning and you were like, look at me, I'm covered in sunshine. Just because the sun is out. So full apologies to my former self for using her as an example. But I really think, you know, with this type of inspiration, it's nothing personal. It's nothing to be afraid of, and it's nothing to try and capitalize on. It's just, if you keep doing this practice and you let it kind of wash off some of those outer layers of gunk, and every now and then you start to have this glimpse of like, wow, there's so much more here. It's because there's so much more there. But it's because that's what our minds are. I mean, according to Tibetan Buddhism, like at the end of the day, our minds at their most profound and most real level are awareness. They're already full of compassion, full of wisdom. So, yeah, so if you have those glimpses, it's not you. But it is real. It's not you in the sense of like you made this happen, or now you have to like make this real. It's already real. It's nothing to be done except a whole bunch of practice. So I think I'll stop there and take questions if anybody has questions or comments.
I have something to say. I can relate to what you said, because, you know, I've gone through periods where, oh, I'm not really that. I'm not really worth it, you know? Mm. And then I get to a point where sometimes I get, oh, I'm awesome. I'm the best. And it's always going back between the two extremes, and eventually I'm getting kind of a more in the middle, right? So that's been a constant thing that's, you know, oh, you know, you go too high, you go too low, and you just can't seem to kind of just be even, you know, about it.
Thanks for sharing. I'm glad it's not just me.
Yes, in terms of not just you. So you, this idea of what might come up when you experience that, you said this idea of I might have made it up, like imagine mm-hmm. it. And for me, what comes up is I'm being immodest.
Yes.
And then I have to tamp it down and
yes.
get small again. Mm-hmm. That's frustrating. But I mean, because I would like to grow some of it, but I'm terrified of the sun is shining on me, right? I mean, I'm like, so there's this tension constantly, this righteousness, and then this like smallness.
Yeah.
Icky. But so my word is modesty. Not I don't believe I made it up, but mm-hmm. I start to think I'm being immodest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my experience of that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. I think that's really important, that it feels immodest to be like, there's Buddha nature in here. I mean, what more outrageous claim could you possibly make? Hey, did y'all see my Buddha? I can show her to you in just a second. But it's really interesting though, that actually in the Buddhist tradition, they call both of those. So I didn't actually like make this explicit, but like both of those, like I should be small. I shouldn't claim, or I shouldn't like, yeah, I shouldn't let go of that sense of smallness. Like that's actually a form of pride in the Tibetan or in the Buddhist tradition, because it's a sense of self. I am small. I am quiet. I will stay hidden. That's a sense of self that's not in alignment with our ultimate nature. In the same way that I'm amazing. Did y'all see what I just did on the meditation cushion? Like that's obviously also not our most true and most deep self. So to me, it's really helpful to hear that both of those extremes are diluted, because often in our culture, we get this message that like, we shouldn't praise ourselves, we should be modest. And I think especially if you're female, there tend to be more of those, you know, those messages to you, just stay, you know, a little bit smaller than you are. And what this is saying is like, no, neither of those is true. What's real? Can you find that and live from there? Which is a whole, at least one whole lifetime's worth of practice.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.